This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of importance to Europeans and people of European descent wherever they may live. And certainly it's important, I think, to all people. The philosophy, the ideas that I express on this program, I think are consistent ideas. They are not hypocritical ideas. I think they're not only good for people of European descent and European heritage, European culture, what we call Western Christian civilization. I think the ideas I represent here are good for every people, because every society, every culture, every race, every ethnic group has a right to preserve its way of life, to preserve its unique identity, and to be free, to be able to express themselves. You know, the age of empire is not an age of freedom. That's something we've got to start thinking about, ladies and gentlemen. One world, a new world order, globalism will not result in freedom. Massive, huge government doesn't result in freedom. Because freedom is something that is born in the palm of your hand. It's something that's born in a close relationship. There's no way people in Beijing can decide what people in Ithaca, New York need or want. There's no possible good that can come out of a world government tracking every individual, putting a computer chip into their skin, and controlling all thought and speech. There's no good that can come from that. And yet, government continues to try to grow and take over. And the government, the world government, the globalism which is being advanced today on this planet, is something that will stifle every people, every heritage. They're trying to dissolve us, ladies and gentlemen, into this corporate entity, this entity of workers, some sort of economic unit, rather than the preservation of our individual freedoms, heritages, religions, and the rest of it. The ironic thing is that the people who are promoting this new world order, and it's not just liberals, it's also conservatives that are doing it. And in fact, sometimes liberals are opposed to the new world order and globalism more than conservatives. A lot of the opposition to the summit, to the economic summits around the world, the G1 and other summits, G8 and other summits, have been by so-called liberals. In fact, the lines between left and right are becoming more and more blurred wherever you go around the world. And I respect a, quote, liberal or leftist that really believes that each people should control its own destiny. That globalism, the idea of a McDonald's or a Walmart in every corner of the world, I don't think is a positive idea for the world. The idea of a massive global government, even if it's dominated, especially if it's dominated by the neocons who are now controlling America. Ladies and gentlemen, just as the neocons are leading this country to disaster, thousands of our young men and women to death, to disfigurement, to being crippled, maimed, emasculated in the Iraq war, a war that's leading to more bloodshed, more hatred in the world. It will wash the world in blood. Not only are the neocons doing this bit of evil to Americans and to the world, they're also destroying the fundamental aspects of our country. One of the aspects of the neocon ideologies, and by the way, they are truly at heart Trotskyites. They're truly communists. They came from a communist tradition. They literally worshipped Leon Trotsky. His real name, of course, was Lev Bronstein. And as Dr. Kevin McDonald points out so eloquently, the neocons are truly a Jewish movement. They're really a Jewish ethnic supremacist movement. They're a movement for the advance of what they consider to be the Jewish people, Jewish heritage, Jewish interests. The Iraq War is about a war for Israel. It has nothing to do with the interest of the United States of America. And it's time that we reach both our leftist brothers and sisters, and rightist brothers and sisters. This war is not about oil. This is not about some economic interest. Oh yeah, there's a couple of companies like Halliburton, some friends of the president and vice president who can make some money from the war. But the war is so damaging to the American economy, it's not even funny. This war is costing us hundreds of billions of dollars. Now that's money that could be used to bolster and improve the American economy. When you buy a product at home and you sell it at home and you consume it at home and you repair it at home and you use it at home, that product and that economic benefit goes throughout the society. When you buy a bomb and you send it overseas, or you occupy a foreign country and the dollar is spent overseas, that dollar basically is lost and it comes back in a trade deficit that hurts the United States of America. Right now, because of this war, the price of oil and gas has skyrocketed because of the dislocation, because of the disorder, because of the absolute bedlam that this war has produced. And it's going to produce more bedlam in the future, especially if the United States goes into Syria and goes into Iran, which is certainly a wet dream of the Jewish neocons who dominate our policy. Yes, it would be crazy. We can't even handle Iraq if we did these things, but these people are crazy. They belong in the nut house. They really belong in the nut house, because these policies, by the way, I believe will backfire on their power in the United States. And I think that there's been more exposure of the power of the Jewish supremacists over the last couple of years of this war than in the last 20 or 30 years. People are learning now who has their hands on the levers of power in the United States of America and in the media. People are seeing this. It's called even a cabal in many quarters. And that's pretty good and pretty good accurate description of what this is. It's a cabal that has links far more than simply ideology. It's a brotherhood. It's a tribal thing. It exists across the realm of government, of both conservatives and so-called liberals. It exists among both so-called Republicans and Democrats. It exists among people in the media as well as different aspects of administration and government. And the one thing that ties this war together and supports this war is that many of the Jewish supremacists, I'm talking about the Jewish extremists who seem to dominate the Jewish community, things like AIPAC, and they dominate many of these Jewish organizations, who support the radical Likud state of Israel. They specifically, all right, see this war as an advantage and something that's good for Israel and for the Jewish community. And that's why we're having this war. And that's why the support for this war goes across so many quarters. You know, we had a few artists and singers and other expressive people in our culture make a few anti-war songs about this war. This war is a lot more insane than anything that ever went on in Vietnam. I mean, it's absolutely incredibly insane, ladies and gentlemen. But it's like, as soon as they started making some songs, these songs were literally suppressed from the radio stations. Now, the reason why, we can take a look at this. See, in the Vietnam War, all right, there were no Jewish interests at stake. There was no Israeli supremacist interest at stake in that war. So all the stations, many of the, you know, as you probably know, you must recognize this already, the record industry, the record industry in the United States is controlled lock, stock, and barrel, I mean, with production, studios, distribution by these Jewish supremacists. And during that war, where American boys were fighting and dying, in fact, by great numbers, there was no Jewish interest there. In fact, they saw the war as a good way to overthrow the so-called WASP establishment in the United States of America, and the war served that in a way. It undermined the foundations of the old American society. And it should have, because we shouldn't have been in that war. And it's interesting enough that some of the people who got us involved in that war were the same Jewish globalists, all right? The same. In fact, the Cold War was an architect of the Jewish globalists as much as anything, because primarily they saw the Soviets as turning against Jewish power. Now, that may sound strange to you. The Soviets went from allies, of course, in the Second World War, to an ardent enemy. And I can tell you the reason for this, and you can even trace the development of Trotskyites. In fact, don't forget the Trotskyites, you see, and back in the 1930s and 40s, even then they were already going against Stalin and the Soviets. And World War II continued this process of removing a lot of the Jewish power from the heart of Russia. Now, the same corrupt regime existed. I mean, communism is a faulty philosophy. It doesn't work. It brings out corruption. In fact, the Russian mafia, there's a lot of good books on the subject that have been published for years. Even during the Soviet regime, there was a lot of organized crime in Russia. And guess what? It was dominated by these same Jewish-type gangsters that dominated organized crime in the United States, like Meyer Lansky. Of course, there's no big movies about Meyer Lansky, like you had about Al Capone. Everybody knows the name Al Capone. Few people even know the name Meyer Lansky. But Meyer Lansky was a much more powerful organized criminal, gangster, murderer, extorter than Al Capone ever was. Well, in this process, the Cold War fired up. And then the Jewish extremists weren't very hard to overthrow. Communism. Not because they had any terrible adversity to what communism is in terms of philosophy, but because they weren't the ones who had the handles of power anymore in the Soviet Union. So they worked to overthrow it, and they helped overthrow it. The problem, and in the process of overthrowing it, by the way, they basically seized control of a great deal of the wealth of Russia again. Out of the 11 oligarchs, 10 of them are Jews in the former Soviet Union, now of Russia today. They have a lot of media control and power. Again, they don't have anywhere near the power, though, in media that they have in the United States of America. And Putin has become an enemy, and there's so much anti-Russian material that goes out around the world in the American media and other Jewish outlets around the world because Putin has dared to crack down on some of the oligarchs. Only Mr. Putin would have the guts to go against the head of the Russian Jewish Congress and people like Berezovsky, people like Kuczynski, who's head of the Russian Jewish Congress, people such as Khodorkovsky, and these other people who are truly, truly citizens of Israel more than they are of Russia. They're not loyal to Russia. They have robbed the Russian people of countless billions of dollars, 11 people controlling 65% of the wealth of Russia, and this took place in about 2 or 3 years, ladies and gentlemen. It was the greatest robbery in the history of mankind, and it was done through, again, a great tribal effort. In fact, not just a Russian tribal effort or an effort of Jews in Russia, but a worldwide effort. They pooled their money and they pooled their capital, which gave them a lot of bribe money and purchase money. They bought up Russian properties for pennies on the dollar, and they basically stole 65% of the natural wealth of Russia right out from under its fingertips. So, ladies and gentlemen, we have a situation right now going on in the world where these Jewish supremacists have this incredibly terrible war going on, and everything is inverted. As I talk about on DavidDuke.com, America is a nation where the idea of torture of a suspect is completely and totally against every fundamental principle upon which our country was founded. There is nothing more alien to the values of America than the idea of torture. America began against the British Empire for far less violations than torture. Taxation without representation, a few outrages by the king. And if you read the Declaration of Independence, if you read the Constitution of the United States, the Bill of Rights, freedom of speech, press, thought, the idea of a right to a trial, the right to a trial by a jury of your peers, the right of habeas corpus, all these things that exist in our fundamental freedoms. Nothing is more alien to the values of America than the idea of torture. Now, it's not that Americans have never tortured before. Certainly, there have been cases of Americans committing torture. In the Second World War, we have a very good example of that in the Nuremberg trials, which were run primarily, again, by Jewish supremacists who insinuated themselves in the United States government, and they needed this, quote, Holocaust to be the sword and the shield of the foundation of Israel. And they committed terrible tortures and atrocities against many of the German captives in the creation of what they call, and what is now called, the Holocaust story. We used to talk about the Bolsheviks. I mean, the Bolsheviks, when I was a young man, about how evil Russia was because they did torture. They had the gulags. Who ran the gulags? Again, in fact, I've just been working on the David Duke Report. And if you're not a subscriber, make sure that you subscribe right away. And you can do that right on davidduke.com. And subscriptions are $35 a year or $50 for a very good money-saving three-year subscription. And if you want, you know, subscribe for some of your friends. It's Christmas season coming up. And by the way, our DVDs at the last conference are now available. So the post office is working more efficiently now, and you can get the DVDs, the fantastic DVDs, almost 10 hours, 10 hours of fantastic video, high-quality video, much better, in fact, than the 2004 video quality. Great speeches by Nick Griffin, by so many people, Paul Fromm, Kevin Alfred Strom. You know, it's just fantastic. And you can order it now. They make great presents, and we have a special price right now, $65 for all four, or $100 for sets of both 2004 and 2005. That's only $50 a set, which is, there's four DVDs in each set. That's only $12.50 a DVD. What a great opportunity. In fact, it's less than that, excuse me. So we have eight. Anyway, it's just fantastic, ladies and gentlemen. We've got a great opportunity to educate your friends, and these will make great presents. Also, of course, my books, Jewish Supremacism and My Awakening, they continue to make a tremendous impact around the world. I'm going to be doing some traveling and some speaking in the next few days, and you'll be hearing more about what I'm up to, because I'm up to some big things on this side of the world right now. And I look forward to getting back to the United States and talking with so many of you and doing a fine speaking tour in America very shortly. Going back to freedom, going back to what's going on, and there's two things that I want to talk about. I'm going to talk about today, first and foremost, the tremendous lie we have in this country that we are, in fact, free. And Bush is saying and demanding that the Islamic world, and in fact even today he's demanding that China be free, that they allow freedom of expression, freedom of speech, and the rest of it. In fact, today I've got a copy of the article from the Union Tribune, and the article's entitled "President Tells Beijing to Copy Rival Taiwan." In the process, he says, he urges China to do better giving freedom to its people, and how that they should copy Taiwan in terms of their freedom. Freedom of, in fact, quote, the freedom to express themselves. The freedom to express themselves without punishment. All right? Punishment. And it says, Taiwan is free, democratic, and prosperous by embracing freedom at all levels. Taiwan has delivered prosperity to its people and created a free and democratic Chinese society. Well, let me tell you something. Taiwan's a lot freer than us. The United States of America, just last week, sent an individual, a German individual who was living here with his American wife and newly born child. They ejected this person from this country, separated him from his American wife and child, and sent him to Germany where he will endure years of imprisonment for being a scientist, for commenting scientifically about an event that took place over 60 years ago, and that's on a specific aspect of the so-called Holocaust. The man's name is Gammer Rudolf. He is a kind-hearted, intellectual, brilliant man. First, the man was denied his doctorate because he dared to trespass on forbidden area. You know, science and education is supposed to be based on a search for the truth, no matter where it lies. That's the idea of education and higher education around the world. And the idea that you can't talk about certain things, even certain truths, because they will offend the powers that be. That's not education. That's inquisition. That's the same kind of rules and regulations that cause people to go to prison or fire and tongs because they were deemed a heretic simply because they said the facts of the matter were different than the churches or the establishment's interpretation of those facts. Imagine there were Europeans, you know, who were burnt at the stake and suffered how many countless years of imprisonment simply for looking at the obvious scientific facts and evidence that the earth travels around the sun rather than the sun around the earth. Well, Gammer Rodolph made the mistake, and it wasn't a mistake, it was the he had the courage actually, to scientifically, he's a chemist, to scientifically examine forensically some of the remains of the so-called crematorium and the so-called gas chambers that existed in Auschwitz during the Second World War. He went to the facilities. He examined the particles. He examined the walls. He examined the residue in proven scientific method. He issued a report called the Rudolph Report. And this report, by the way, was far more advanced even than the report that the gentleman did from Massachusetts who was later attacked by the media. And he showed that the rendition of Auschwitz as proclaimed in the Holocaust orthodoxy, that this conditions which they say existed there in terms of gassing were absolutely forensically impossible. It's the same way, ladies and gentlemen, when a forensic scientist discovers a dead body and someone says this individual was shot, but then the forensic scientist looks into the body and finds that the heart had stopped long before the bullet penetrated the skin. You can tell that by the bleeding or some other aspect. Can you still say that person was shot? Or should you? Or is it some sort of religious is there a religious prohibition of saying the person was poisoned instead of shot, or saying the person died from a different cause? All Gammer Rudolph did was he applied proven scientific method and forensically studied some of the process that went on at Auschwitz and issued a scientific report about this. And for this, they want to put him in prison. They want to put him in prison for years and separate him from his American citizen son, child, and his wife. I don't remember if it's a boy or a girl right now, but I know he's recently had a baby. Terrible, terrible act of injustice. And they said he missed a meeting. Well, obviously he wouldn't miss a meeting. The lawyer said they got no results. America, you know, how dare George Bush go lecture to the Chinese about freedom or lecture to anybody about freedom or the people in Baghdad or the people in Syria or the people in Iran? The United States government shipped out an individual with an American child, an American wife, on the basis that they had committed a thought crime, that they had exercised their freedom of speech. On the flimsiest grounds, this was done. Let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. This show I want to dedicate to Gammer Rudolph and the fantastic courage of this individual and bravery and honor of this man. And it's men like that that will determine whether or not our people will survive, or whether we'll go the way of the dodo bird and the other extinct creations of life upon this planet. We are really facing a horrendous time, ladies and gentlemen, a dark ages, and Bush dares to talk about freedom of speech and expression. And where is our morality anyway? Look at what our recent ally, Israel, does. And I've been saying for so long, and many other people too, Israel Shahak talked about this during the course of his life. Averny and many other Israeli commentators still talk about it now in the course of their work and their thoughts and their intellect. They talk about the fact that Arabic life in Israel is not as valuable as Jewish life. And literally, the Israeli army has basically green light to gun down and to murder Palestinian children. Well, the most recent article about this in The Guardian, the most recent court case in Israel, demonstrates this fact, I think, clearer than anything that I could say about it. Let me give you some of the details of this article, and you judge for yourself this great ally of Israel that we send our money to, and you wonder why people around the world hate us and why people want to hurt us when we support such a state that does this. Here's the headline from The Guardian, and this is from today's Guardian, November 16th, Wednesday, 2005. It's by Chris McGreal in Jerusalem. The article's entitled, Not Guilty, the Israeli Captain Who Put 17 Bullets into a Palestinian School Girl. An Israeli army officer who fired the entire magazine of his automatic rifle into a 13-year-old Palestinian girl and then said he would have done the same even if she had been 3 years old, was acquitted on all charges by a military court yesterday. The soldier, who's only been identified as Captain R, was charged with relatively minor offenses for the killing of Ayman al-Hams, who was shot 17 times as she ventured near an Israeli army post near Rafah refugee camp in Gaza a year ago. The manner of Ayman's killing and the revelation of a tape recording in which the captain is warned that she was just a child who was scared to death made the shooting one of the most controversial since the Palestinian Enfantada erupted 5 years ago, even though hundreds of other children have also died. After the verdict, Ayman's father, Samir Al-Ham, said the army never intended to hold the soldier accountable. They did not charge him with Ayman's murder, only with small offenses, and now they say he's innocent of those, though he shot my daughter so many times, he said. This was the cold-blooded murder of a girl. The soldier murdered her once, and the court has murdered her again. What's the message? They're telling their soldiers to kill Palestinian children. Let me go into some of the details that are printed in this article to show you what was going on here. The Army's official account said that Ayman was shot for crossing into a security zone carrying her school bag, which soldiers feared might contain a bomb. It was not known why the girl ventured into the area, but witnesses described her at least 100 yards from the military post, which was in any case well protected. A recording of radio exchanges between Captain R and his troops obtained by Israeli television revealed that from the beginning, soldiers identified Ayman as a child. In a recording, a soldier in a watchtower radioed a colleague to the Army Post Operations Room and described Ayman as a little girl who was scared to death. After soldiers first opened fire, she dropped her school bag, which was then hit by several bullets, establishing they did not contain explosive. At that point, she was no longer carrying the bag, and the tape revealed was heading away from the army post when she was shot. Although the military speculated that Ayman might have been trying to lure the soldiers off their base so they could be attacked by accomplices, Captain R made the decision to lead some of his troops into the open. Shortly afterward, he can be heard on the recording saying that he has shot the girl and, believing her dead, then confirmed the kill. I and another soldier are going a little nearer forward to confirm the kill, etc., etc. I also confirmed the kill. Palestinian witnesses said they saw the captain shoot Ayman twice in the head, walk away, turn back, and then fire a stream of bullets into her body. On the tape, Captain R then clarifies to his soldiers under his command why he killed Ayman. This is Commander. Anything that's mobile that moves in the security zone, even if it's a three-year-old, needs to be killed. At no point did the Israeli troops come under attack. The prosecution case was damaged when a soldier initially said he'd seen Captain R point his weapon at the girl's body and open fire later told the court he'd fabricated the story. Captain R claimed that he had not fired the shots at the girl. That's what you call a setup, ladies and gentlemen. However, Dr. Mohammed Al-Hams, who inspected the child's body at Rafah Hospital, counted numerous wounds. She had at least 17 bullets in several parts of the body, all along the chest, hands, arms, legs. The bullets were large and shot from a close distance. The most serious injuries were to the head. She had 3 bullets in the head. 1 bullet was shot from the right side of the face beside the ear. It had a big impact on the whole face. The Army's initial investigation concluded the captain had not acted unethically, but after some of the soldiers under his command went to the Israeli press to give a different version, the military police launched a separate investigation after which he was charged. From the Watchtower, the following is a recording three-way account. It's a little girl. She's running defensively eastward. Are we talking about a girl under the age of 10? A girl about 10. She's behind the embankment, scared to death. I think that one of the positions took her out. I and another soldier are going a little nearer to confirm the kill. Are we talking about a girl under the age of 10? A girl about 10. She's behind the embankment, scared to death. A few minutes later, Captain R clarifies why he killed them. This is a commander. Anything that's mobile that moves in the zone, even if it's a three-year-old girl, needs to be killed. Over. Ladies and gentlemen, what would have happened in Israel if this captain or any Arab would have killed a 13-year-old Israeli girl? What would the story have been in the press? How much are you going to see? Are you going to see headlines of this in the American press over the next 24 hours, next 48 hours? Are you going to see exposés of this incredible case of injustice in the American press? And of course the answer is no, never. Because it shows the true nature of truly the evil state of Israel and the abuses and policies of that state against innocent people. When in the world are Americans going to realize and understand what's happening in that part of the world? Well, ladies and gentlemen, let me go to Stormfront, and we'll take a couple. There's a very good cartoon, by the way, of this issue. I showed her 20 times. It was great. You know, not guilty. Israeli person who put 17 shots, 17 bullets into this Palestinian girl. A little overkill, isn't it, ladies and gentlemen? That's how it works. This is from Nordic Wise, from Traven, actually. Good morning, Dr. Duke. Thank you again for all the work that you and yours are doing. I have one question this morning. Since you have been in politics for so long now, I was wondering if you could enlighten the audience to some indicators that our movement is growing. We could really use some good news. Personally, when I hear of even small victories, it makes me want to get out and do even more for our cause. Well, that's a good question, Traven. And by the way, anybody else would like to pose a question or a post, go to stormfront.org, the town hall section, or send me an email directly at info44@davidduke.com. That's our current email address. That's info44@davidduke.com, and I'll try to get to it as soon as I can. All right, ladies and gentlemen, and Traven, let me give you an example. In fact, I can give you a perfect example of this. You know, when I was running for office in Louisiana, the polls showed me to be about one half of the votes that I later received. And they used to say that I flew under radar. The truth is that so many of our people are looking for some sort of answer. They're looking for someone to stand up for us. It is a sleeping giant that is waiting to awaken. And you can see this, and you can see evidence of this in the smallest things, in very little things. Here's a perfect example. There is a small suburb of Fort Worth, Texas, called White Settlement, Texas. White Settlement, Texas. And it was called that because white people lived there from a very early time, before the last century, and they were surrounded by different Indian tribes and different Mexican groups, and it was all white people, and they named the settlement White Settlement, which is an innocuous name. There's no racism in the settlement. There's no hatred in the settlement. Just as something would be called Indian Point or something might be called whatever, it was something reflecting of the fact of the settlement. Well, because the settlement has the word white, innocuous as it is, but part of the history and the heritage of this small town in Texas, because it's got the word white in it, it became politically incorrect. And the mayor and others said, no, we've got to change the name because this name is racism and it's hurting economic development and people don't want to come here because it's White Settlement. And of course, the average citizen of White Settlement's thinking, well, my gosh, if they want to come here, let's keep the name. In other words, they saw an opportunity to kind of stand up for their heritage, for their culture, for their traditions, really for their people. So they put this to a vote of the people of White Settlement. And this settlement, a White Settlement change, they wanted to change the name to I think it was called West Settlement, was supported by every bit of the establishment. The local papers, in Dallas-Fort Worth supported the name change. The politicians supported the name change. They used the big campaign. We've got to be progressive. We can't have any racial name in terms of our settlement. And the people of White Settlement then voted And let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. They voted like 10 to 1 to keep the name White Settlement. They voted 10 to 1 to keep it. This is a sign, ladies and gentlemen. It's symbolic of the fact that if you give, there is a huge movement that is bubbling beneath the surface, that is seething, that is boiling beneath this placid surface. And it's going to be up to our people to go out there and to break that surface and let that hot white lava of social change and political change come out. It's got to come, and it's going to come. Now, I got elected, and I got huge numbers of votes in my state. I got over 60% of the white vote twice in major elections where I was outspent 100 to 1 in media. And there's many areas of the United States that don't have the high minority population. In the rural areas of Louisiana, I got, in many places, over 80% of the votes. And this is an individual who never, there's been nobody in America who's never been attacked, I think, as much as I've been attacked, accused of more terrible things by the media and by our very fair. We can't call the press a yellow press. We might call them the urine press, but maybe yellow press is not fair to them, right? But, you know, this press was absolutely, this Jewish press was absolutely evil toward me, and yet still 80%, because people were looking for an answer. There's a soft underbelly of politics in this country. I urge those young people listening who are in college right now, who are out of college, who are small business people, who are, you know, professionals in some way, get involved in politics. You don't have to be terribly radical. You don't, you know, have to put up any controversial signs or symbols. You just stand up and say, you know, I want to defend the rights of European Americans. You simply talk about the fact that immigration and this illegal immigration is going to sweep away the basis of this country. You talk about the fact that hardworking middle-class taxpayers pay all the bills and get very few of the benefits. We can't even get decent medical insurance today, and yet welfare recipients get it free. All these issues talk about the basic issue we're talking about. You talk about the attack against our heritage, how George Washington's name is being taken off of public schools in many of our racially changing cities. You talk about the crime element, which has affected our people, the fact that people can't use the public schools, the effects of busing and forced integration in education. You talk about affirmative action, the discrimination going against our people. Let me tell you something. These are powerful issues. I prove these issues are powerful in Louisiana. And ladies and gentlemen, you can use these issues as well or even better than I have used them. Keep your history clean as you can. Even with a controversial past like I had, you can certainly, and have, I guess, you can still make a fantastic impact. Don't start big. Don't run for president. Don't run for governor. Don't run for senator, at least not at first. First, get elected. I don't care if it's the dog catcher or city council or school board. You're concerned about the books your kids are getting in the school board? Run for school board. You know, half the time the school board and the administration only sticks up for the black students. You can say, look, I want to make sure there's going to be equity in our schools. I'm concerned about the fact that the NAACP has control in the school board. Go for city council. Go even better for the House of Representatives in your states or the Senate in your states. House of Representatives is better than Senate usually because it's a smaller race. You can knock on every door. The first thing you do before you do any of these political activities is you build a group. Travin, you can do this. You are talented. I mean, you've got great talent in terms of your singing, your writing, your ability. Just get together a social organization in your own community. You can work under the auspices of EURO, European Unity and Rights Organization, European American Unity and Rights Organization. And then make it a social function. Get together every couple of weeks. Have a party. Bring a little food together. Watch a film that's pertinent. Discuss certain issues. Have a dance once in a while. Have a barbecue. All right? Educate your people. Motivate your people. Have different speakers come in and speak and lecture and educate your people. Talk about the real issues. Develop this unity. Build your group. you have each person bring one more person, two more people, and have this organization grow in your hometown. You don't even have to even have dues or have a very small dues. Just get it going. Make it a social club, like a social event. And then as they go along, get these people to read My Awakening and Jewish Supremacism and other material. Get them involved in the internet. Get them involved in Stormfront. Get them involved in getting the David Duke Report. Educate them. Motivate them. And then as soon as you get 30, 40, 50, 60 dedicated people, which won't take you long, you can do it easily in a year, then you have a political force. You can go into one of these small races and you can knock on every door. Get your people out there and find yourself a candidate, or you yourself run as a candidate. You know, immerse yourself in those issues. If you're a young person, make sure you study to where you know these things backwards and forwards. Debate the issues every day in your classrooms, among friends and relatives, to where you know every argument, and you can do it powerfully. Work on how you present yourself. Be able to debate. And you'll go to these forums, these candidates' forums, and the people will go, and they'll be shocked to hear how eloquent you are and how powerful you are, and they will be agreeing, and they'll be saying, man, I really agree with Travin, or I really agree with Fred, or I really agree with John. Man, that guy says exactly what I'm thinking. He's the only candidate I ever heard, and soon you'll develop a momentum. You've got all these workers to go out there, and you'll get elected, and you can begin to change the political process. Ladies and gentlemen, we have the opportunity to do this. That's one of the things that I'm preaching and teaching, and I hope all of you will understand this. We are in a situation now that we have to have a many-fold approach if we're going to survive. We have to be involved in politics. That's where the game is played. We have to be involved in media, creating our own media. We have to be involved in creating our own communities. We have to be involved in what I would call evangelical work of bringing our people to this cause and educating them. We've got to build this consensus. We can do that. I'm doing the best I can with the internet, with this radio program and these other activities. But I need you if we're going to go all the way. So, ladies and gentlemen, get involved, and by the way, this has been a good show, so tell your friends about it. Get it, go to the archives, it'll be up in about 10 minutes, and I tell you, I will see you again, hopefully, tomorrow, and until then, all I can tell you is God bless, and take care, and be dedicated. You know, it's not just an intellectual game that we're doing here. It's a struggle for the very life and freedom and heritage of our people. God bless you. Take care. Let's go to work. Thanks. Bye-bye.
This has been David Duke for our heritage and our freedom.